Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following big interview was posted in full for our socios, our members, our friends, our supporters at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. And that was last season, 2019-20. Sign up there and you'll get every interview we produce before it's released on the main feed, plus the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You'll also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. And what's more, you'll be supporting us. You'll be keeping this independent podcast on the road. Thank you. Even if you never watched Andrea Orlandi play, even if you're not a big Barcelona or Swansea or Brighton fan, even if you don't follow Italian second division football or Indian football, Andrea Orlandi is somebody I've been working with on La Liga television recently, and he's extraordinary. He's easily one of the best television analysts of football I've ever worked with or listened to. And what's more, he shared a dressing room with Leo Messi, Xavi, Iniesta, Ronaldinho. You're going to love Andrea Orlandi because he's exceptional about explaining the beauty of football, a life in football, and he speaks better English than what I do. See you on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, it'll be no surprise to you that this is the big interview, because that's what it said on the tin when you bought it in the supermarket. And therefore, when you get the tin opener out, you didn't expect baked beans, you expected the big interview. Hi, it's Graham. If this is the first time you've heard me, where have you been? We're sitting in a very high tech, it's actually Toby's office. Andrea, you don't know Toby, but it's a pretty cool office, right?
It is cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
It'll do for... It's not good enough for you, but it's way too good for fucking me. Guys, we're with Andrea Orlandi today. And the reason that we've invited this talented footballer, talented Catalan, Italian footballer, to come on the big interview is that I've been working on television now since the very early 90s. Off and on. They don't cast me in any of the big dramas or movies, which I think is wrong. But football people seem to get me on television. And I've found it really, really rare to hear a voice. And I've warned Andrea that I'm going to lavish syrup all over him because of the praise. To hear a voice as sharp, as analytical as you. And for those who listen to the big interview, and for those who help produce it with me, we yearn to hear football criticism and football analysis, which educates us. Because each of us involved in this project, the socios and the occasional listeners, all want to expand their knowledge and to learn. And that's what you've done with me. So, first of all, Andrea, you're an exceptional TV pundit, but you had an exceptional career behind you too. So... Buenos dias, bon dia, good morning. I don't know if you can do good morning in Welsh. How much Welsh have you got?
Well, not much Welsh.
Very little.
Very little. It was difficult. I mean, I had the chance to live both in Wales and El País Vasco, the Basque country, and I had the same problem, you know, with the language. I learned a few words, of Welsh, but not much, not too much.
Well, the intro has already explained that you're a footballer who's worn the tangerine of Blackpool.
Yep.
And the various shades of Swansea strips.
Yep.
You've carried a seagull in your heart since the days of Brighton. But you're also of Blaugrana. You're a Blaugrana pupil.
Yep.
And supporter too. So, Andre, I want to take you back to the, one of the things that links us, and I don't know if you, I was a Cub Scout at the time. I don't know if there's a scouting association in Spain where it's Baden Powell and you do your duty and you learn how to build campfires and tents and stuff. But I was in 1976. Mm-hmm. I was a 12-year-old, and we entered a team in a five-a-side tournament in Aberdeen, and I was a little Cub Scout. And it was Cub Scouts against the Rough Boys from the centre of the city. And unbelievably, literally unbelievably, I can see the disbelief in your face. In May 1976, we won this tournament. And as the striker, Poacher, who stayed up front all the time and didn't do any work back, I did a Paolo Rossi. In the quarterfinals, I got 3 goals. In the semifinals, 2 goals. And in the final, 1. Happiest I've ever been in my life. I come back home. And my mum and dad tell me that Bayern Munich, who I hated, because Ajax had won 3 straight Champions League European Cup, starring my idol, Johan Cruyff. Uh-huh. And then Bayern Munich won 1, and then 2, and then the 3rd against Saint-Étienne in Glasgow at Hampden Park. It was 1976. Now, 1976, 86, 96, 2006. 29 years later, Saint-Étienne demand an anniversary game. And the anniversary game is against Football Club Barcelona.
Yep.
Now, you play in it. You play in that game for Football Club Barcelona at Saint-Étienne in a friendly match.
Yes.
Try and set the scene of who you travelled with, who you were playing with, and what it felt like to be in that company.
Well, it was just an unreal experience. We travelled, I remember we had... obviously I had my seat on the plane, so I had like a full row for myself. I had 6 seats, and that was impressive, and I thought, wow, that's different. I remember landing in Lyon with Ronaldinho. Ronaldinho had to play in that game, obviously he was the main
by contract,
and he was a rock star. He had the security all around him, all the fans were out for Ronaldinho, and I was like, am I really here? Is that happening? So that was the building up for the game. We were having lunch together with the players. Ronaldinho was sitting next to me, and I was shaking. I was like, come on. You know, I couldn't even eat my spaghetti. I was that nervous, and it was only a friendly game. But for me, it was like the Champions League final. So he was trying to, you know, to make me feel comfortable. There were 3 or 4 players of the B team there. And, when we got into the stadium, beautiful stadium, Saint-Étienne, it was packed full, brilliant atmosphere. I remember Buffetini Gomis was playing there. Piquion was playing there.
Piquion played up front.
Played up front.
Missed a couple of chances.
Yes.
And then Buffetini scored.
Yeah, Gomis scored. Yeah. I had the chance to speak to Gomis, you know, years later, and he remembered that game. He was only young. And obviously, 60 minutes into the game, Santi Ezquerro was playing as a left winger. So Rijkaard just calls me and says, listen, just warm up for 2 minutes, you're coming in. And I thought, okay, let's give it a go. So I just had this, you know, quick warm-up. Rijkaard comes to me and says, well, you're playing as a left winger, replacing Santi Ezquerro. And I said, okay. I said, okay, coach, what do you want me to do? And he said, well, just do something. You don't need to do much to do better than Santi. And I thought, wow, okay. that's a bit harsh on Santi Ezquerro. And I went, okay. So I just went... I just went out. I remember Edmilson telling me to stay wide because he was going to play...
Wide left.
So first minutes into the game, he plays this diagonal ball like 50 meters like into my foot, my left foot. You know, perfect. So I control the ball. With the control, I get past the fullback. And I'm thinking, okay, I was on. I was straight on, you know, going to the center back. I said, this is my chance. So I had the chance to pass the ball to Ronaldinho or to go one against one with a center defender. And I thought, in my brain at the time, I thought it was a good idea to take it myself. Obviously, it didn't happen. I lost the opportunity. And so I looked at Ronnie like a bit shy. And he didn't say anything, but, you know, just looking at me, he was like, come on, man, next time, give it to me. So as the game progressed, you know, I tried not to complicate things and play easy. I was linking up with Silvinho, you know, not taking too many risks. Ronaldinho scored a beautiful free kick, an unbelievable free kick. And
one of these find the dope moments when the wall was mucking about and the keeper wasn't quite right, and he just went right, and from about 25 metres...
Yeah, so straight into the top corner. And I remember him training, and after every single training session, he would stay there with Jorquera, who was the second goalkeeper, taking free kicks from outside of the box, and he would put 9 out of 10 on the top corner. It was like, wow. It was impressive. I used to stretch. I'd never stretched in my life, and I used to do stretching for 45 minutes just to see him doing that every single training session. So he just scored a beautiful free kick. We were losing 2-1. Last minute of the game, that I remember that my whole life. And I'm on the pitch, but I'm like watching TV. I was like, is this real? So I see this guy getting past one. Oh, it was unbelievable, Graham. But then I'll tell you what happened later. Then he gets past one, gets past two. I'm on the corner, you know, on the edge of the box, on the left, and he just gives me this no-look pass. So the ball's coming. He's looking right, gives it to the left. So he gives the ball to me, to Andrea Orlandi. And I'm thinking, wow, what am I going to do? So I remember what happened in the first minute of... So I said, listen, I'm gonna go easy with the inside of my foot and try to play the ball. What happens is the ball bounces before I'm going to hit it, and it ends up like 10 yards outside, you know, of the crossbar, you know, on top of the crossbar. So there was, Belletti there, I think it was Maxi Lopez, Ronaldinho, all looking at me in despair, like thinking, what is this guy doing? And the referee blows the whistle, so the game ends. I walk into the dressing room and I felt like so small. I felt like the smaller player on earth, like, I don't deserve to be here. I mean, they're too good for me. You know what I mean? So it was difficult to take, because then you don't have players coming to you. Even if it was a friendly, this is Barcelona. This is like the top university in football. So you need to be at the level, even if it's only a friendly game. And I thought to myself, okay, that's a challenge. I don't know if I will have another opportunity, but I didn't take this one. You know, and it was a great opportunity to show, you know, that I was maybe not good enough to play at Barca, but to have more chances to play for them. And I remember being on the shower, no one was talking to me, showering next to Belletti, Ronaldinho, Van Bommel, Edmilson, these type of players. And honestly, Graham, I felt so small. I had the quickest shower I had in my life. Got changed, get back into the bus, you know, and we flew back from Lyon. But it was a really good experience, because I took the positive part of it. I thought, I had 30 minutes at a beautiful stadium, you know, playing for Barca. I played with Ronaldinho. He had the belief in me, because he gave me that ball. You see players sometimes that if they don't trust the other player, you know, he wouldn't have given me that pass. And it was a big lesson. And I made sure that the next time I was ready for it. Because obviously I remember everything that happened. I remember what I ate. I had this spaghetti tomato sauce. With tomato sauce, which I couldn't eat. I remember the conversations I had with Belletti about how he got his passport, his Italian passport. Ole Gerr was there, brilliant guy, you know, talking to me, trying to help me. But then again, I wasn't ready for the game. I wasn't mentally ready. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's not that I didn't take it seriously. All the opposite. I took it too seriously. So I it wasn't me playing out there. It was I was too nervous. So that was a big lesson for me, because when I had the chance to play again and to train again with them, I made sure that I was ready for it.
Well, so that people understand, you've named most of them, but that the team that night was Valdez, Belletti, Rodri, who had a couple of chances, Oligar, Silvinho, Edmilson, Van Bommel, Thiago Motta, Esquero, Maxi, mad chicken celebration Maxi. Who really wasn't Barcelona quality. Maxi, I'm sorry, he's still playing.
He's still playing for Crotone in Italy.
Ronaldinho,
yes.
And Jorquera comes on, you come on for Santi, and Damia comes on for Rodri. Coach was Frank Rijkaard. You've explained the situation and who you played with and the lasting impressions, but this is in the season that the team you play with become European champions.
Yep.
They win the Champions League in Paris against Arsenal. So you're at a very high level, and already you've talked about the mental component.
Yeah.
and you know, you said you became ready for the next time, and you trained regularly with the first team because Rijkaard, as well as the players, saw something in you. You actually also won a trophy with Barcelona because you beat Espanyol in the Copa Catalunya.
A very good Espanyol side,
coached by the current Barcelona manager, Ernesto Valverde, And equally, that team that you play in is very good, and it's taken relatively seriously here. You play in a team with Jorquera, Belletti, Olmo, Oleguer, Servinho, Sastre, Mota, Mark Crosas, who went to Celtic and played for a long time in Mexico, may still be there. Giovanni Dos Santos, plus Esquero, against a team that had Gorka, Chica, the good fullback, Danny Harkey, who will come back to, Corro, Ruffetti, who's currently
Sports director
at Espanyol. You lived in elite company, but was this one of the games, the game against Espanyol, where you then were ready? Or when were the times that you began to say, okay, from Saint-Étienne, I've learned to focus, I've learned to visualise, I've learned to eliminate nerves and stage fright?
I played in the league before that, San Mamés, and I had, you know, a lot of training sessions with the first team because Silvinho, I won't say that he didn't like training, but you know, sometimes he wasn't ready to train because he was taking care of himself, you know, ready for the games. And Rijkaard was using me as a left back most of the times with the first team. And I remember that first training session that I had after that experience at Saint-Étienne. That was me. You know, I took things simple, but you know, it was great, and I was enjoying myself. And I could see that, you know, the first team players looking at me, thinking, okay, this guy, you know, it's not bad. So I earned some respect, and I earned a lot of confidence because when you are training with these players and you see that trust in you, you think, wow, okay, there must be something in me. You know, I'm not that bad. I'm not the guy that played at Saint-Étienne badly, but this is me. And obviously, I made my debut in La Liga against Bilbao at San Mamés as a left back, you know, against a strong side, and I had a good game. You know, and everyone was, you know, was happy with my performance, especially Frank Rijkaard. And I had another game in Copa Catalunya against Nastis Tarragona when I had two assists. And I remember
two crosses for
Giovanni and for Esquero.
Esquero scored, yeah.
And I remember that was great because as I was walking back into the dressing room, Rijkaard was waiting for me. And he's a big boy, you know, strong.
Yes.
So he just, you know, gets me in the air, like, you know, he just throws me
a bear hug.
A bear hug, and he goes, "You are the left-footed David Beckham." And he goes like, and I was like living the dream. I was like, is this really happening? You know, I was the happiest man in the world. And obviously that game against Espanyol in the final, we got that, you know, we lifted that, you know, little trophy, that Copa Catalunya, that for me, it was like the Champions League. You can't allow yourself to lose if you're Barcelona. And especially against Espanyol, it's a big game. And I remember Xavi, who wasn't involved, coming to the stadium to watch the game. You know, coming into the dressing room after the game, you know, to talk to us and to congratulate us for the win. So we beat them on penalties. I remember, you know, it wasn't an easy game, but I was ready. I was ready, Graham. Every time I had the opportunity, you know, I took it. And obviously my situation at Barcelona was a bit, you know, a weird one because I was alone from Alavés, and then they wanted to sign me permanently. But I don't know if you remember, there was that moción de censura with Joan Laporta that summer,
effectively, for those who don't know, means that the members, the socios, had sufficiently lost confidence in him, and it's the time when Sandro Rosé, his vice president, walked out. Yeah. An open letter in the media saying, Johan Cruyff, leave my club alone. Laporta, you rely too much on Cruyff. He walked away because you played at San Mamés in the match day 38. You're a league champion.
You are a league
champion of Spain.
Yeah.
You won the title. That's a fact.
That's a fact, yeah.
And the censure motion was some fans wanted to say, we want to vote Laporta out because of your behaviour, blah, blah, blah. So, you, like you say, it was turbulent times, which affected you a little bit.
Yeah, it affected me because Barcelona made a first offer to Alaves to sign me permanently. But this happened, so everything was stuck. So I got stuck in between Alaves and Barca, and I ended up going back to Alaves, which obviously, with all respect to Alaves, who was a... a great club. You know, they gave me the opportunity to become a professional footballer. They took me from Barcelona to Vitoria. It was a great experience, but being a Barcelona boy, playing for Barca, I really wanted to sign for Barca. And then when you are, when you belong to a club like this, you know, it's a different story, Graham.
You know me a little bit, but I can already see the suspicion in your eyes that you know that I can be a bit of a cabron as well. And football is very cruel, so the big interview is very cruel. It wasn't only the motion de censura which stopped you playing for Barcelona, because I listen, I'm just reaching here, but I think you had a little message from Pep Guardiola, which we call it in Scotland, you gave the rubber... Andrea, tell me what happened between you and Pep Guardiola, because this isn't right, man. This is
no. That was these are the mistakes that you make when you are a young boy. And
I've made 10 million. I promise you.
But then you learn from them. At the end of the second season, you know, the current coach of the Barça B team, who was Quique Costas, you know, a long servant of the club, for the club,
and really, really respected by Pep.
Yeah,
I know that, because he then got removed, and
yes,
and Pep was somebody who believed a lot in Quique.
Great,
Costas.
A great person, Quique. Great friends with Johan Cruyff as well. I remember, I'll say this, because Quique coming to me at my first season where I was not playing with the B team, mm-hmm. and he comes to me and says, "Listen, there's something in you. I can see something in you." And I'll tell you as well one thing. Johan came to a training ground and said, "This number 11 is a good player." And if Johan said that, you know, you are a good player. So believe in yourself. So those words for me were so important, and they gave me a lot of confidence. And then you know, I changed. I had a problem. You know, my biggest problem in my career has been my head most of the times. Where once I got it right, you know, everything went. Quite easily, but at the beginning, the confidence was a huge problem, and it comes from my, you know, my youth when I played. I started at Espanyol. It wasn't an easy dressing room, so my confidence level was really low. So during my career, I kind of built myself up again to be confident and to have that self belief. Those words from Quique were very important. Anyway, having said that, he comes to me and says, "Well, listen, there is a new manager coming into the second team. It's going to be Pep Guardiola, and he wants to speak to you." So they put up a list of players he wanted to speak to. I remember it was 11 in the morning and my appointment was at 1:30. So I thought, I look at the watch and I remember that, well, you know what? I'll go home. What is Guardiola going to tell me? This is the stupidity of the young player that thinks football is going to be easy. I'm going to have a lot of opportunities. You know, I'm at Barcelona, so I will have teams knocking on the door for me. It's going to be... You know, it's going to be an easy future for me. So I went home. I didn't go and I didn't attend that meeting with Pep. Greatest regret of my career. But then I learned from it, because since then, every time a manager wanted to speak to me, regardless of the quality of the club or the team, I always, you know, made sure that I attended those meetings.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
You were then, how old were you?
20.
20?
Yeah.
So at 30 and at 40, I would make mistakes 10 times that size. But I don't think it only reflects on you, because I was here then, I've written about it, I watched it. It sounds odd now, but you're a witness to it. Even though Pep Guardiola was a figura, because as a player he was really, really good. Busquets' style, at yeah. least. An important, not the most important player in the Dream Team, but one of.
Yes.
To make it tick. But when he took over Barca B, there was very little fanfare. He had no experience. He had his badges, but it was his first job. In the media, there was little, what they call here, repercussion. It got a couple of paragraphs. Look, an old favourite is coming back. Nobody said, there was no big fuss about this. A guru is coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A figure to save the club is coming. There was the same lack of excitement when he took over the first team. The big headlines were about clearing out Ronaldinho and Deco. So from the perspective of a 20-year-old, I'm sure Pep Guardiola was a big name to you, but he wasn't some guy, God, if Pep Guardiola is putting my name up on the board, it wasn't the same.
No, I know.
People
I know.
Need to understand.
Exactly, exactly. It wasn't the Pep Guardiola that we all know. I mean, we didn't know about him as a coach, but I should have, you know, attended that meeting, because I'm someone that really gets the feeling, you know, when I speak to someone.
Yeah.
And probably Pep would have definitely convinced me to stay. But you never know what, you know, maybe I'd stayed and after a couple of games I was benched. You never know, you know, if the story would have changed or something. But, you know, it's a big regret, because now, you know, I would have loved to hear him speaking to me and to see why he wanted to speak to me, or what was his idea of me being in part of his team. After that, when Paulo Sousa wanted to speak to me at Swansea, I took a plane from Barcelona, went to Swansea for a day, spoke to him. After 3 minutes, I was in love with him. So maybe that would have happened with Pep as well.
When you're coming through the Espanyol system or the Barca system, I think maybe you played 60, 70 games for Barca B. You played a lot of games for Barca B. What kind of footballer were you? Because I'm not joking now. What stands out now when I listen to you talk about football is a really sparkling intelligence, clear communication, a deep understanding of football. Now, I think you're going to tell me later on you don't want to be a coach, but I can't see you for very long only being involved in television analysis, because bigger things are calling for you. That's my view, and I'll stand by it. And in a year or 2 years, I'll be telling everybody on this feed, look, I told you. That's a serious point. Tell us about what kind of footballer you were. Not just technically, but what your eyes told you on the pitch. Give me a big picture of you.
I think that my biggest quality was that my passing ability. I could see passes not most of the players, but some players couldn't see. I wasn't the quickest, Graham. I wasn't the strongest. I didn't have a great 1v1 when I was playing out wide. I had a good cross, a really good cross on me, but I thought that...
How did you cross it? Tell me about the art.
Well, you know, I took a big advice by Silvinho. That was brilliant from him. Training with the first team at the Camp Nou, I remember, we were crossing, me and Silvinho were crossing on the other side, where Belletti and Damià, we were crossing for Ronaldinho, Eto, Maxi López, I was there. So it was big pressure. I had to put good balls for them. You know,
they that, wouldn't have been patient if the ball wasn't
exactly
coming.
Exactly. So I took my first two crosses, and then he comes to me and says, "Hey, Andrea, listen, this is very simple. But what you do while you're running, you look, you stop, and then you cross. So you kind of slow your run. Doing that, then you have to put too much pace on that cross. Just keep running at the same speed and use that speed to give power to the cross." That looks simple. You think, well, that's not as important, but it made a huge difference to me. And that session, you know, I had the best crosses, you know, of my life. And since then, I took that into my career. And every time I saw a player like slowing down, looking up, you know, taking the cross and not crossing well, I thought, listen, you know, this is what Silvinho told me and really helped me. And, you know, so I passed that advice on the others. So that was the first thing. Just use my run to cross. And I remember one season at Brighton, I had 15 assists playing out wide. I had 11 for Leo Ulloa, who was our striker. He knew where the
title with Leicester.
Yes, exactly. Who won the Premier League with Leicester after. I knew where Leo was and he knew where I was going to put the ball. So we had that understanding. And it was all about whipping the ball. It was I didn't want to have, because some players, they just want to cross and have the best cross of their careers, I say. They just want to have that beautiful cross. You need to put the ball in the money, as we say.
Nice.
Just put it in the right area in the box. You don't need to have that amazing whip. I had it, but I didn't need to. You know, I wanted my teammate to score. I didn't want to look good.
Yeah.
I just want us to win and to get an assist. So it was like, you see like Leo Messi, what Leo Messi does with the free kicks, where he whips the ball, but at the end he just moves his ankle in the last time, you know, to give direction. So this is something that left-footed players have, that ability to move the ankle. One of the best players I've seen is Mata. Mata does it brilliantly. So I had this technique, this ability. And then I think that I was clever enough to use my strengths and also my weaknesses. So if I had to play against, you know, a quick fullback where I know I'm not going to beat him by pace, you know, I'm going to be more intelligent than him. I'm going to put myself into positions that are difficult for him to defend me. So it was more like me using my brain than my body or my fitness, because actually my fitness let me down, you know, a lot of times during my career, but it kind of stopped me progressing and probably becoming, you know, an established Premier League player, for example.
Fitness or maybe, do you mean parts of your physique?
Parts of my physique, I've had too many injuries.
So many injuries,
especially at Swansea. My 5 years at Swansea were disappointing because we had a great story coming from League One to the Premier League. But then, for example, I made it into the first team in the Premier League. You know, it was difficult for me. I took my chance. We beat Aston Villa away, first Premier League win away from for Swansea. So Arsenal's coming home during the training session in the week, just pulled my hamstring 12 weeks out.
That's a bad hamstring.
Yeah, very bad. It nearly a rupture. So I nearly needed an operation. So it was my body stopping me from, you know, from becoming something better. So I had to learn, you know, where my limits were, because I wasn't a player in England, for example. You play 50, 60 games per season. So my top was 42. I couldn't play more than that. So, but
I don't think that's something to, because playing 42 in England is different from playing 42 over here.
Yeah, of course. But then again, you as a player, playing for an English team, when you see your teammates playing 56 games and not feeling it, but you feel it and you want to give more. You want to reach them. You know what I mean?
I know the frustration.
Yeah. So it was frustrating. It was like, you know, not being able to give more. And for me, it was a big problem. You know, my physique, my fitness at times. I could run for fun. I could run like 12 kilometers every game, no problem. You know, but I didn't have that that power, that strength, that speed. You know, that sometimes all the players had. And it, you know, I always said to the wingers, to the quick ones, you know, you don't know how lucky you are. Mm. You know, because you don't need to think. You know, to think ahead of the rest. You just need to put the ball long and run.
So does this bring you, because you came through, you're of a similar age to, say, Iniesta.
I'm same age as Iniesta.
A little younger than Xavi. A tiny touch older than Busquets, but you played with Busquets.
Yes.
He came on in that Copa Catalunya final. That must make you think about players like them, because Iniesta was super quick in small spaces because of his technique. Not a super quick athlete.
But he...
Busquets, again, comes right into the description you gave of yourself about, like, he's always had to say to somebody who's quick, well, how lucky you are, because he's always had to plan about what do I do to get out of this telephone box I'm in with six players around me, but he does. So these players must, particularly because they're of your generation, you must have watched them learn from
absolutely.
Them. You must have an appreciation of what they've done.
Absolutely. With Iniesta, Iniesta was really quick, Graham. Really quick feet.
Athletically quick?
Yeah, very quick.
Okay.
You know, probably people don't realize, but he had so much speed, especially in the first... the first meters, to get out of that pressure.
Acceleration.
And that acceleration, I was more like into longer distances, you know, I kind of got to that speed, you know, but in the first yards, first meters was my biggest problem, because obviously I'm quite tall as well, mm-hmm. so it wasn't my biggest ability. But with Iniesta, it's a different level, Graham. I wasn't at that level. So
you played against each other, with each other,
with each other as well in the Catalan under 15 side. So I played with him in the midfield. So I was the one, you know, getting the balls and you know, just for Iniesta to actually deliver and
what
play.
What was your formation? 4-3-3 there?
Or? We played 4-4-2 for Catalonia, and
really?
So it was me and him playing in midfield. We used to do these small sided possession games at Barcelona. He wouldn't lose a ball. It was impossible. So you couldn't take the ball off him, and he never gave the ball away. And I wasn't at that level, Graham. I have to be honest. I wasn't that good. Same with Busquets. Busquets didn't have it easy. I remember when he first got into the first team, his dad was Carlos Busquets, the goalkeeper.
A very firm, sometimes quite aggressive guy.
He was the goalkeeping coach at Barça B, and yeah, he was aggressive. He could be aggressive. Great guy, you know, great professional as well. But then again, his son, you know, it wasn't easy for him. And I remember him, the first training session, the first thing, people calling him Crouch, because he was tall and skinny. And like in a funny way, you know, it wasn't very easy. But then he got the ball. I remember the first training session, he never gave it away. And I thought, wow, how easy. And it's not easy. It's not easy at all, because it's tight spaces, you know, training with the best players. So they had something different.
When you come into those rondos from, because you started, presumably some rondos featured in the Espanyol training, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Some also at Alaves. But yeah. When you've come from Alaves on loan, mm-hmm. what are the rondos like for you?
I was quite comfortable, because I had to say that probably the technique wasn't my biggest strength, but it's the key of Barcelona style of play. So it's not like a rondo just to have fun.
No.
It's actually, you know, a tactical work, and then people don't realize that. So it's just about open your body up, giving lines of passes, moving and offering yourself, you know, to the teammate. It's not like only a way to warm up. It's actually a way to set you up for the possession games after, and then the small-sided games later on. So, you know, there's actually a tactical component on it, which is very important. And, you know, people don't realize, and it was a big thing for me in England to try and explain to my teammates.
I went to Newcastle because Alan Pardew had asked me to compose a list of who could be the next Fernando Torres for mm-hmm. him. At the top of the list, I put, people know this already, I put Diego from Atleti. He was at Valladolid, uh-huh. Diego Costa. Ulloa, I think, was third on my list, Rondon. And as a thank you, he took me over and we had a chat, and I met Jose Enrique, and he said, come watch training. And I watched training, and it's exactly like you said. The rondo was there so the lads could kick the ball around. If they kicked it away, they didn't care. They were laughing at each other. They were teasing each other. For a long time in the UK, that... Now, it's different. Like, for example, at Manchester United, they play boxes.
Yeah.
They never call it rondos, they call it boxes.
Boxes, yes.
But when in this series, when Michael Carrick tells you about the boxes and Roy Keane pinging the ball at you hard to see if you can manage it. Also, it's a different concept from the rondos at Barcelona.
Yeah.
But in Britain, for a long time, nobody viewed the rondos as elite-level mentality, team ideology, thinking two passes ahead, movement for a teammate... Also, some fitness in the middle, pressing.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. There's everything as well. The pressing, yeah. If you are in with your teammate, how you actually stop You know the ball's going through you, and you know how you go and press. Otherwise, you're going to be outplayed, especially at Barcelona, if you don't do it right. And then with the boxer, there's a lot of variations. It's not only the 5-2, 6-2, or something like that. You can actually do, build up from the basic one into, a very difficult one. So at Barca, we're special. Normally, when the press goes into the training ground and sees the first 15 minutes, is the, let's say, the easy part, just the warm-up. But then after, it becomes, special and difficult. I remember Zambrotta being the world champion, coming into Barca, struggling to get out of the Rondo. So
to get out of the middle.
Of the middle. Yeah. So because he was giving the ball away too easily. And then once you get in, it's very difficult to get out.
Nobody takes pity on you. They say, like, you're staying there, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's there's no mercy when you're in. So it's not like you've been... there for 20 minutes, you are there for 20 minutes. So there's no mercy, Graham. It was, I won't say easy for me, but I have to say that I got so much better. Those two seasons at Barcelona made me a lot better.
They changed you?
They changed me. Mentally, I was a lot quicker. I thought quicker. In tight spaces, I was a better player. And obviously, technically, I improved as well, because you can always improve.
You've talked a little bit about the specifics of people telling you things, but I also like what you see, because your eye is keen. Also, for us, for me, for every year, it's a privilege. I met Ronaldinho a couple of times, always in good circumstances. Once, it's in one of the books, when he was out for the night and he walked by, he kind of knew me and came up and gave me a big hug, so as to just as if to treat me like a friend, which we weren't. Mm-hmm. So in other words, I wouldn't go and write about it or tell anybody. It was really clever on his part. He was wearing a huge Peaky Blinders cap back then in 2005. Actually, your time in Barcelona.
Yes, he loved that.
I interviewed him. I remember his friend, his helper at the club, Juanjo Castillo.
Yes.
Complaining to me and saying, the club won't give him goalkeepers. He wants to train free kicks. And the club is so shit that they won't even help him get reserve guys to stay behind or come back in the afternoon. Not stay behind, but come back in the afternoon. It was a club that wasn't ready for the rock and roll star. So when you train with... again, we've talked about this before. Arnau Riera was captain of B team.
Yeah, Arnau, yes.
And Arnau we played five-a-sides with way back in the day, and we went to the pub to watch Liverpool Milan in Istanbul, and great lad.
Great lad, yes.
So he talked to me about, like, when you're training with Ronnie. Describe Ronaldinho, the guy, the footballer.
I remember my first training session. I turned up 2.5 hours before the training session. I was that nervous. I was sitting in the dressing room. No one was there, but the first one to walk in was him. So he looks at me and he gives me his his typical
thumb and pinky.
Yes.
With the middle fingers folded in and a little as if you're phoning somebody, right?
Exactly.
I don't know what it means. Do you know what it means?
It's a Brazilian thing of just say it's okay.
Tudo bem.
Yeah. So he walks in and gives me this big smile and he sits down and he had all these letters from the fans and he opened every single one, looked at them, piled them in different, positions. I don't know why. So probably if it was probably from the countries or whatever. So he looked at every single one and I thought, wow, he cares.
Top,
he cares about the fans.
Top person.
He got changed and then he started talking to me and making me question where I was from. And he said, well, how old are you? Are you 15? Because at the time, I always looked a bit younger than my age. And at the time, I really looked younger than what I was. And I said, no, I'm actually 19. I was at the time. I said, no chance. So every single player that walked in, he was saying, how old is he? and he was saying, he must be 15. I said, no, listen, I'm 19. Anyway. It was special, Graham. And I remember doing a two-touch. This thing when you come into the pitch, there's a ball there, we're close to each other, and he starts, okay, let's do two touches. I was nervous. I was giving him, like, rocks. And he did something that is going to be really difficult to explain in English, where he faked that he was going to pass me the ball, just lifted with his toe to the back of his body, looking at me in the eyes, so he didn't even look at the ball, back-heeled it back to the front, and just pass it to me.
He scooped the ball up
exactly
back over his own head.
Exactly.
Behind his back, used his heel to put it back in front of
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
And then passed it to you.
Yes, looking at me in the eyes. He didn't even look at the ball. And I thought, okay, you play. And then what Arnau said as well, that physically, he was so strong. So let's say that you go and close him down. in 2 seconds he was 3 yards away from you. You know, it was.
Did he use you? When I say you, did he use the player coming in to bump off them to go away again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And he enjoyed it so much. You could see a guy enjoying himself out there, and probably when he stopped enjoying himself, this is when he left.
It's not a revelation here. We know he and Deco and Mota and occasionally Messi Valdez, but the three probably of Deco, Mota, Ronnie. Went out, partied too much. Did the things I do.
Yeah.
Well, drinking too much. And also, it's, you know, at a time when Rijkaard wasn't paying attention. The last season particularly, he not only wasn't strict, his head wasn't fully focused. The Ronaldinho's in the gymnasium today, not training, was that he's sobering up.
I've seen it, Graham. I mean, I've witnessed it.
Yeah.
On the press was, he's been on the gym, working on the gym. But it was a big shame because he could have been the best player ever. For me, is at a different level in terms of technique. It was magic. He could do something. The way he touched the ball as well, it was completely different to anything I've seen. And Messi was there already, and you could see that Messi was special. Deco was special. Iniesta, Xavi, so all these players were fantastic. But he was, for me, at a different level. You know, it was magic. In everything he did. I remember a five-a-side, which was the craziest five-a-side I've ever done in my life. He was in my team. Samuel Eto'o was there. Lionel Messi, Xavi, Iniesta. And I was there. So as we were playing, I was moving, you know, on this little pitch. He was on the left. He just lifted the ball. He volleyed with the outside of his right foot. And the ball, you know, with a no look, the ball touched my chest. And I scored. So he made me score. He used me to score. And he went, "Well done, lad." I said, "Oh, bien." And I looked at him and I went, "Yeah." I said, "Well done, Ronnie."
That's really extraordinary.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, he said to me, "Well done," but he actually scored using me. So he was a genius, Graham.
When you think back about your life, for all the things, because, you know, you go up divisions with Swansea, you go to Wembley. You know, you maximize your talent. You enjoy your life. You're a happy man living here in Barcelona. Still talented, still young. Very popular on TV analysis. A wife and two kids. Life's been good to you. And you've used your life well. When I hear little things like this, when I have mad little things in my stupid life, every now and again, it doesn't happen all the time, you go back and you reflect and go, did that really happen? That's just pure magic. That means that there's a, for my taste, you can say what you want, there's a greater being up there who created us, and he goes, every now and again, he goes, oh, yeah, Graham needs some magic, and I'm going to give it to him. I feel like touched sometimes. But to be not only part of that and good enough to be in that environment, but also used by Ronnie for some fun, some goals, some touches. That's off the scale, man.
For me, it was a dream. And I remember that particular training session. I went and picked my girlfriend, with my wife now, up at the university. And I was, you know, I needed to talk to somebody.
What get happened. Out. Yeah.
And I was so excited. And she was bored, you know, after 10 minutes of me. I kept telling her, but you know what happened? You know, it was Ronnie and he did that and he did it. She likes football, but then again, can you stop? Can you call someone and tell him? So it was, you know, when I had, you know, big lows in my career and in my life, and I use that as well. You know, I go back to the days where I had these experiences and some positive ones, and it was special, Graham. I don't know, you probably understand me as well. For me, it was a very important moment. I remember everything like if it was yesterday, where some of the things, you know, I just cleared them from my head. But those days with Barcelona, you know, I remember them, you know, really well, as if it was yesterday that I was training with Ronnie. You know, I can still smell, you know, the dressing room. I can feel what I felt then. It's really deep, you know, inside.
It's important to carry that around with you.
Yeah.
Because modern life is so aggressive, so fast, it burns you out, that these things can, if they don't disappear, they can drop.
Yeah.
And to be able to feel and smell and hear those things now, 2004, what, 15 years later, is crucial. It's big, eh?
Hey, I do hope you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios, our members who support us. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 per month, you'll get all our content entirely ad-free and ahead of its release on the main feed. Please go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast and we'll blow virtual kisses toward you. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.